Senator Larissa Waters. Larissa is the first Green Senator for Queensland. She's also an environmental lawyer who worked in the community sector for 8 years, advising people on how to use the law to protect the environment, particularly the Great Barrier Reef, I know is an area of interest for Larissa. And in the Senate, she's been working on the Great Barrier Reef, but also promoting renewable energy and protecting agricultural land from incompatible land uses. And in 2010, she was named Australian Young Environmental Lawyer of the Year.
I think the fundamental problem is we simply don't know about the long-term impacts of coal seam gas. And my particular concern, there's a raft of them, but I guess the one I've focused on most, like Gavin, is groundwater. And when we've got bodies like the National Water Commission and the CSIRO putting out statements and giving evidence to Senate inquiries saying, actually, we don't understand what we're doing long-term to our aquifers with coal seam gas extraction, then that is very alarming to me that state and federal governments have both rushed in to give approvals despite that lack of scientific evidence about what we're doing to this place. So that's my overriding concern, but there's a litany of other concerns. The climate impacts are a really good point. I think one of the other speakers mentioned that. A lot of the claims about how clean coal seam gas is are spurious. They're based on overseas studies in different geological scenarios. So there's been no Australian independent studies into coal seam gas and how clean it is on a life cycle basis. So sure, the gas burns cleaner, but what have you got to do to get to burning it? Well, you've got to get it out of the ground. You've got to pump it an awful long way. Most of it is for exports. You've got to compress it. And then you've got an awful lot of leaking pipes and wells. And it's those fugitive emissions which are the most concerning because they're the ones we know the least about. And there's been some studies, again, not into coal seam gas, into shale gas, so slightly different, but studies out of the US saying that when you factor in all of that excess energy input and all of those leaks, it's actually not that much cleaner than coal. It might only be about 3% cleaner. Now, when you've got these massive impacts on farmland and huge potential impacts on groundwater, 3% just ain't worth it. And when we've got alternatives for energy production, like renewables, like this wonderful sun that we're blessed with, particularly in Queensland, wind, wave, geothermal, the list goes on, it just makes no sense to risk our precious farmland, which we've got so little of, when we've got these alternatives that are clean and we know they work and they're not going to stuff up the groundwater. So they're the key concerns. The health impacts are something that I've investigated a little, but not as extensively as groundwater. My concern, and I put this in Senate Estimates questioning back in last October, my concern is that they're not actually looking into the fracking chemicals that are being used. NICNAS, which is the National Chemicals Regulator, has actually only done a study and effectively ticked off on the use of 4 out of 60 commonly used fracking chemicals. And what they haven't looked at, as well as those 56, are the interactions between the chemicals. So again, huge unknowns about the risks that we're taking, and the precautionary principle, which we have in many of our laws and our governments are meant to impose, seems to have gone out the window. And as I said, governments have given these projects the tick when we actually don't have a full understanding of the impacts of those chemicals. The farmland point I've touched on, and I think Ruth's given us a really great example of the surface impact and the fact that with certain farming operations, you're actually not going to be able to continue to do as you've done because of the sheer litany of ponds, of compressor stations, of pipelines, of access roads, of wells themselves. But it's that groundwater impact that concerns me most in this driest continent inhabited on the planet. Because if we don't have that water to use to grow our food with, then where are we going to get our food from? We've got alternatives to energy, but we've got no alternatives to food, and we've got no alternatives to water. So they're the risks that we're taking. I want to talk a little bit about why we're taking action at the federal level. And it's basically in a nutshell because the states are doing a bloody awful job. In Queensland, the industry has really raced ahead of the regulation. Excuse my French. The industry's really ramped up in the last probably 3-4 years, most intensively in the last couple of years. And the state government, and now, of course, we've got a new one after the result on the weekend just gone, the state government's starting now to improve the regulation of coal seam gas, but they're still a long way behind. And as Ruth said, there was never that requirement at the outset for those baseline groundwater studies. So if you don't have a picture of what you started with, how do you know what impact you're having as you go along? The EIS requirements are very shoddy, they're haphazard. And crucially, there's no right for landholders to say no. So to your question earlier about property rights, actually landholders don't have any when it comes to resource extraction. It's not just coal seam gas, that goes for any mineral extraction. The Crown owns those minerals and those resources, and landholders simply cannot say no. So it's disgusting, but the companies can hire the police force at $111 an hour in Queensland to get the coppers out there to actually protect the rights of these companies to go onto land where they're not wanted, doing potentially devastating impacts that will roll out over the years, and, you know, that's what the law says. So that's prompted us federally to think, look, if the states are not up to the job, we need the federal government to step in, because groundwater is a national resource and our food land is important to all of us. We want to be able to be eating locally grown, good, healthy, nutritious food. So we think the federal government should do more. So I guess I come at this from a legal background, and currently the federal government has a very limited role to play in approving coal seam gas. It has to tick off on coal seam gas where it's going to impact on species or World Heritage areas or wetlands, but it doesn't at the moment regulate the water impacts, which is just farcical because clearly that's the biggest concern. It doesn't regulate the climate impacts either for that matter, although I won't go down the carbon price path, it will be here all night. There's some positives there for coal seam gas, but still a way to go. So I've got two bills before the Senate that would try and bring the feds into this arena and, I think, make them do their job of what I see as protecting the environment. So the first is a bill to amend our environmental laws to add a water trigger for mining. And it would say that if you've got a big mining proposal, including a coal seam gas mining proposal, that's going to have a significant impact on a water body, be it a river or be it groundwater, any form of water body, then the federal government should have to consider those water impacts and should have to give an approval or ideally actually refuse something, which they rarely do. So that's one way of making sure the federal government can properly regulate water. Now, it's gone before a Senate inquiry, that bill, as bills do in the federal parliament, and all of the other parties have said, actually, nah, we don't want to do that. We don't reckon the feds should regulate water. The states are doing a great job. Go back to sleep, everyone. So when you've got things like the Pilliga spill, and when you've got the contamination of the Springbok aquifer, which sits near the Walloon coal measures in 2009 by Queensland Gas Corporation, then clearly, and you've got the community being the ones drawing the government's attention to these problems and saying, where are you? How did you let this happen? And why are you not making the companies fix it up? Why is it our job to hold them to account? When the government is so lax, I just think it's crucial that the federal government step in and take some responsibility. So we'll continue to push for support for that, but it may be a bit of an uphill battle. The other bill that I've got is to give landholders the right to say no. And that's really important because across the whole nation, there's only one tenure in WA where landholders can say no to coal seam gas. And you might recall, I think it was about August last year, Tony Abbott said something sensible, which is great, good on him. He could do more of that and I'd be quite happy. And he came out and said, farmers should have the right to say no to coal seam gas. And we thought, great, we agree, finally, let's get a bill before the parliament. We'll have the numbers to get it through. So we hurriedly started drafting. And then the next day he said, oh, actually, no, I still think farmers should have the right to protect their land, but we're not going to let them say no. So a complete backflip there, which was very disappointing, but perhaps not surprising. But be that as it may, we're continuing with our bill to try and allow farmers to say no, because when you've got only 4% of Queensland that's considered good quality agricultural land, and like Ruth, when the coal seam gas companies could go elsewhere if they could fix all of the other problems, which I don't think they could. But for heaven's sake, surely the 4% of our best land should be off limits for a risky industry. So that's my other bill. That's come up for debate twice. It came up in September and just again 2 weeks ago. And again, unfortunately, all of the other parties, including the Nationals, who claim to represent the bush sometimes, spoke against it and said that, again, for the same reasons, they didn't think the federal government was needed here. It's not traditionally the federal government's role. Traditionally, the states deal with that. And, you know, the states were all doing a tops job. Again, I think we really need some better education of our federal police and a bit of a reality check there on just how poorly the state governments are regulating these industries. So keep the letters flooding in if you could. We've put up a few motions for a moratorium on coal seam gas until we've got better information. And again, that comes back to the groundwater information, the climate impact. Haven't even talked about the impacts on the reef. As Ruth said, most of these new projects are for export. So not only will they push up domestic gas prices, which is an interesting cost of living factor that I think people will get more interested in the coming months, but there's massive dredging going on in the reef and then massive increase in shipping. Now, we've got devastating impacts rolling out in Gladstone Harbour, which is part of the World Heritage Area, and yet they're pulling out it's 65 Melbourne cricket grounds worth of dredging in total in the reef, and 46 million cubic metres of that from Gladstone Harbour. So just vast amounts of seabed that they're then partially dumping offshore, again in the World Heritage Area, and then trebling the shipping through the port. So I don't know how I got onto that point. Yes, moratorium. So we want more information about what's happening to the groundwater, what's going to happen to the climate, what's going to happen to the reef, what's going to happen to our farmland. And again, unfortunately, we got no support for those two motions. And I don't think it's a big ask to say, look, until we know what we're doing, for heaven's sake, slow down. But it seems that the other parties have still got a bit of a way to go. And that's where you come in. There was some good recommendations in a Senate inquiry that handed down its findings in October that said, let's take more of that cautious approach. Let's get the results of some of these groundwater studies that are now belatedly being done before we issue any more approvals. So if you do nothing else, I want you to take one of these flyers. There's a website on the back and it's got a letter generator on it. And it will give you some prompts for what you can ask your federal representatives to do. And it'll include backing those two bills, putting in a moratorium, and stop stuffing up the Great Barrier Reef for this spurious industry. Certainly in the UK, they've had tremors that have been attributed to hydraulic fracturing, which, as we've talked about, is where they pump in a mixture of mostly water with sand and then with some proppants, often toxic combination of things, now not BTEX, but as Gavin said, it then that process itself can mobilise the BTEX that's in the coal seam. So there's been experience overseas of those tremors being caused, and it is a risk, clearly. And again, it just goes to show we're racing into this stuff without really understanding what on earth we're doing or whether these technologies are safe. There certainly are individuals amongst many of the parties who are as concerned as all of us are about coal seam gas. Whether or not they have the influence remains to be seen. I'm sure that they're pushing as hard as they can, but they've yet to bring their parties with them. In Queensland, it was an issue in the state election, and interestingly, it wasn't just an issue in the bush. It was an issue in the cities as well, because, as I said, people like to know where the food comes from, and they want to know that they're supporting their local farmers. At least I think that's what they want, and certainly that's what folk that I talk to want. So it was an issue in the state election. The new incoming government has made some small positive announcements on coal seam gas, like moratorium in the scenic rim, which was where that protest where the police were hired after the companies rolled straight over a whole lot of Akubras and arrested a whole lot of people, and which is also good quality farmland. And they've said they'll look into a moratorium in central Queensland. But they're still backing the industry, and they're still not saying farmers should be able to say no until we know whether this industry is safe and what it's going to do to our food security and our water and our climate and our reef. The Katter's party had some quite progressive policies on coal seam gas, not so progressive on social issues, but, welcome their support on coal seam gas. And they did quite well, and I suspect it was off the back of coal seam gas because perhaps folk in the bush were maybe a little cautious about backing the Greens, but happy to back Katter, and he was very vocal on coal seam gas and likewise was calling for a moratorium. I just think we need more and more voices to speak out, and the more political spectrums, the better. And I think, the community's got a huge role to play in trying to drag the pollies towards a more precautionate approach and a more protective approach of our beautiful natural assets. Oh, it's obviously gas, so it's explosive. So they have restriction zones and they're fenced off, and they do a lot of venting, which likewise you don't want to be a smoker around that. You don't want to be a smoker anyway, it's terrible for you, but you don't want to be doing it anywhere near a coal seam gas well. Subsidence is another big issue, because obviously when you're dewatering an aquifer to get to the coal seam gas, then, you know, inevitably there's going to be some subsidence. And there were some good recommendations about guarding against that and compensating properly for that in that Senate inquiry report that I referred to. We did have massive problems after the big Queensland floods of January last year. A lot of those holding ponds, which Gavin had and Carmel had some slides of, flooded. And so all of that salty, salty, heavy metal contaminated water flowed into creeks. Now, our Environment Department didn't live up to their name and issued basically temporary permits to get out of your original permits to allow and approve the release of that water in the flooding, rather than planning ahead and thinking, gee, you know, it's Queensland, we might get some big floods, maybe we shouldn't be allowing these massive holding ponds to store this water. They have since updated the water rules and their disposal to streams is now a last resort option, but frankly it shouldn't be an option at all. Yeah, so there's big concerns about safety, both from flooding and from explosives and from subsidence.